How are you, my friend? This is Alex Pardo, and I got another masterclass episode on the Flip Empire Show, number 312.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
What's going on, guys? I am going to come right out and say it. We are coming in hot with this episode. I have my friend, Brian Ponciano, successful investor out of Arizona. And more importantly, on this episode, we cover something. We go in a direction that I don't think I've ever gone on in an episode because BP, as I call him, is somebody who I met about a year and a half ago at a multifamily event. And he is as raw and real and as authentic as they come. Like, what you see is what you get with BP. He does not mince words. If you are somebody that is offended or you don't like colorful language, this probably isn't the show for you to listen to. But I can tell you that you're going to kind of deprive yourself of a lot of wisdom and perspective from somebody that came from a very difficult upbringing, that grew up in a gang infested environment in South LA. He is the son of immigrants. His parents are from Guatemala. He was born in South LA. And like I said, you know, just grew up in a very tough environment, and he gets very raw with what that looked like and how difficult it was to be surrounded by that. And, you know, when he was around 13 years old, his parents, who did so much for him, realized that if they would have stayed there, he was going to end up going down the wrong path. And they ended up moving to Arizona. And, you know, he actually attributes a big part of, you know, where his life is today because of the fact that his parents had the foresight to take him out of that environment. And we spend so much of the show talking about mindset and personal development and how it's been a catalyst for BP in his life to get him to where he is today. You know, in his early 20s, he got into direct sales and he would door knock, and eventually he landed on real estate, built a very successful wholesaling and fix and flip business. And he talks about how he just got burned out with the transactional nature of the business, despite the fact of how much money he was making. He realized that he was lazy and there was a better way to make money. And so, you know, 2016, 17, he got into multifamily. We talk about a deal that him and his partner Chris took down, and I believe it was Arkansas, about a year ago. And, you know, he talks about, you know, a lot of, if you're listening to this show, you're an investor, you're probably a wholesaler. And you might be looking at alternative ways of generating cash flow. He talks about that transition, you know, and how difficult it was to unplug from, you know, consistently generating a lot of revenue from wholesaling and fixing and flipping to not really making much money for the first 12 to 18 months in multifamily. But, you know, we get into the specifics of that. And so I have a feeling you guys are going to get a lot out of this episode. BP is, like I said, he's colorful character, really, really good dude, has a good heart, has so much wisdom to share, and has a lot of life experience, comes from a different background, one that I just, even though I didn't grow up in that environment and I don't have that background, you know, we share the Latino culture, and I can relate to him on a lot of levels. And so, really cool dude, successful investor. You know, having said that, I'm excited to introduce you to BP. So let's jump right into this. BP, what is going on, my friend? How are you, brother?
How you doing, brother?
Man, blessed. I'm doing amazing. How are you?
I am fucking amazing, man. It is such a pleasure and an honor to be in your show. It's good to be able to connect with you again. And, yes, you know, we met at an event a while back, and it's great to be able to connect with you. I love the stuff that you're doing, man. I love the content that you're putting out there. I love just all the sharing that you do on social media. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with not even more your family life, your personal life. I love the interaction that you have with your family, your kids, your wife. It's just a beautiful thing to see. But, man, I am happy and I'm blessed to be here.
Thank you for sharing that, man. Coming from you, that means a lot. You touched on it. You and I met probably about a year ago at Corey Peterson's multifamily event. I had, I know you have a very popular show on iTunes with Chris, and you guys have a lot going on out there in Arizona. And always heard about you, man, but it was a pleasure getting to know you. I just love people that are raw and authentic and give it to you straight. Don't BS. And I love what you're doing, obviously, on the multifamily side of things. What I want to jump into, BP, is you have a really interesting story and background. Matter of fact, I don't know that I've ever had the honor of interviewing someone that has kind of had such a rough upbringing from what I've heard anyways, but I'm hoping you can fill in the blanks. And I want you to kind of take people through your journey because, you know, where you started to where you are now, it's really inspiring, man. It's really inspiring, like what you've done with your life. Forget about the business stuff. You obviously have a very successful multifamily business, but man, a lot of people that grow up in the environment that you grew up, from what I've heard, you know, they don't get out of that. So I'm kind of going to lean on you to educate me, fill me in, and kind of share with the audience your background and you know, usually I like to start with how people got started in real estate. I want to take it further back. Your childhood. I know your family's from Guatemala. I have now an affinity in my heart for Guatemalans. I just did a mission trip there and some of the most genuine people I've ever met in my life. Very humble, very happy. And so I feel like I got a special place in my heart for Guatemala for the rest of my life. And so another reason I'm excited to connect with you, brother.
Guatemalans are amazing people. I'm not just saying that because I'm Guatemalan myself. I do a lot of traveling, and Guatemalans, especially when you go outside of the city, even within the city though, but especially when you go outside of the city, just very mild, meek, humble, very just happy, genuine. They don't really have a lot, but they're always celebrating. Something similar that I found with the Haitians. But as you did mention, I come from immigrant parents. My family was born in Guatemala, born and raised, both of my parents. And my parents were, I guess you could say, lower middle class in Guatemala, which is way poorer than lower class here in the U.S. A very, very, very poor upbringing, very, very poor living. They didn't have running water continuously. Hot water was a complete luxury. Sharing the rooms was something that you did standard, you know, having your own bathroom and shit. Like that stuff was that was rich people stuff. So my parents came, they immigrated into this country. My dad wanted something different for his family. And he took the chance and he immigrated into this country. And, you know, he started off doing field work and eventually he moved into construction and that type of shit. And we grew up in Los Angeles. And when you grow up in Los Angeles in a community filled with immigrants, most people fall into the same scenario that I just mentioned. So my dad, because he came in here, he didn't have any education. Now you're forced to do construction. Now you're forced to do labor. Now you're forced to do factory type work. Right. Then my mom came and then she had the same type of work or whatever. Well, we all know that those jobs aren't high paying jobs.
Right.
So that means that you have to have both of your parents working. That means that more than likely one of your parents is going to have to get a second job, a part time job or something. So there's a lot of these. There's a lot of absence of parenting because we have to make the bills. We have to pay the bills. We have to do this. We have to get our family going. Yeah. Well, a lot of that breeds into a lot of gang activity. It breeds into a lot of young people with nothing to do, with nowhere to go, with nobody to really guide them. Because even though your parents love you, they're tired. They're tired. They just worked fucking 12 hours at one job, go work another 3-4 hours at another fucking job, standing up on their feet their whole time. They get home, they're just tired. They don't really, they just, you know, hey, how you doing? Where's the food? Okay. Pass out on the fucking couch. I mean, that's something that happens a lot. So anyway, it breeds a certain type of, it breeds a certain type of environment where people just don't have a lot of guidance. And unfortunately, when you are living in a big city, especially when you come from minority background, the mm-hmm. only way that you really see and the only realistic way that you can see to make money or to even do anything different is to get into gangs, to get into drugs, to get into other things like that, where you're constantly looking for validation in yeah. places that you don't have them because you don't have them at home. Yeah. And that's why I mentioned in the beginning of it that I love your interaction with your children, with your daughter, your interaction with your wife, because you're building the foundation, yeah. letting them know, hey, man, if anything happens in the future, you can come talk to me. It's okay. As opposed to, don't bother me right now, man. I'm tired. I've been working all day, man. Don't get out of here with that bullshit. Right, so it right. really breeds a area of that. Now, I would say that I had very good parents. My parents were very, very strict. They didn't work multiple jobs. They both did work.
Okay.
But they always made it a point to kind of be in and around our lives. However, most other people that were in that society were not. And even then, with my parents being how they are, it was very, I was this close to joining gangs. I was hanging around them. I was being around them because in those neighborhoods, all those other kids, sure. you know, I was lucky enough to have my dad. Most people in these scenarios do not have a dad or have a stepdad or whatever. Now they're looking for male validation in other mm-hmm. people. So they start joining gangs. They start thinking that those tough guys that they see out on the streets, that that's what it's supposed to be. So anyway, you start breeding a whole city of that. Then all of a sudden, all these people are fighting amongst each other. And now all of a sudden, you're walking around as a kid. My family was never involved in gangs. It's not like my uncle was a gang member. It's not like my dad was a gang member. My older brother was a gang member, which was a reality for a lot of people in this community.
Yeah.
However, for somebody like me, you're walking down the street.
Right.
The most common question that I got as a kid was, where are you from? Which basically means, what gang are you affiliated with?
Yeah, who are you affiliated with? Right.
Who are you affiliated with? That, where are you from? That was how it was asked in South LA where I was growing up. Where are wow. you from? Dude, in elementary school.
BP, what do you attribute? Like, because, man, I would imagine growing up in that environment, it would have been so easy to go down that path. What kept you out of that? Was it your parents? Like, what do you attribute the fact that you didn't ultimately end up joining a gang, which most likely, I'm guessing, would have completely altered the course of your life? You know, had you gone down that road, who knows, right? What kept you away from that lifestyle?
I would say a lot of it had to do with my parents. They really were overprotective in that sense that they didn't want me to join that. So it was like I had to come home right after school. I wasn't allowed to hang out with certain people. I was, you know, my friends come over and they can hang out in my house or we can hang out in our front yard, but I wasn't allowed to go over to their places. Mm-hmm. They were just very protective of that. So they were actively working to keep me away from gangs.
Okay.
Now,
did you push back on that?
Of course I did. I was right about the age of 13-ish or so when I started pushing back on that. I started hanging around some people that were really affiliated with gangs. There was a in gangs, and it's weird, but you have like main gangs and then you have like little gangs outside of them. And then within those little gangs, then you have like peewees, which are people that are kind of in that age range, 12, 13, 14, where you're not old enough to be in a gang yet, but you're kind of like, you're being prepped to be in that gang.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You're being groomed to be there. So anyway, I started hanging around those kids and you know, I started being hanging around their little clique and everything. And I know that that was one of the reasons why my parents moved to Arizona and moved me out of LA, because I think they saw it coming that, hey, if we don't do something right now, like at some point he's going to rebel and he's going to do that. And we saw that. I mean, I saw that because my parents were very heavily involved in church. We went to church all the time.
Okay.
And even at church, you would see the kids, some of the kids that you grew up with, right at that age range, they started all of a sudden shaving their head. They started wearing the size 50 pants. Hmm. They started, you know, they started getting down that cholo pathway. So my parents kind of knew, they kind of saw They did the best that they could, but eventually they just had to take me out of there. So I do attribute the 100% the fact that I did not end up going in gangs was to my parents because of their active. And I do agree with you that had I gone down that path, my life would have been 100% completely different.
That's incredible, man. I mean, it's I kind of get chills listening to your story because I didn't grow up in that environment. And so I don't know what it's like. And something you said on another, I forgot where I heard it, but something you said resonated with me. You said, it's very easy for people from the outside to look at that lifestyle and judge. And while I may not approve of it, I've never walked a day in those shoes. And so I would imagine that when you're in that environment and you're just in the middle and you're kind of surrounded by it, the fact that you got out and the fact that your parents were able to kind of see what was happening to take you out of that environment, it's incredible, man, because, you know, what percentage of people that are in that environment actually are able to get out and not fall into the gang life? I would imagine a very small percentage of people that grow up around that environment.
Yeah, because even if you don't fall into an actual gang member, you're always somehow in some way gang affiliated. Mm-hmm. If you continue to live in that neighborhood, before you know it, your sister's dating a guy, you're dating a girl whose cousin is in a gang or brother's in a gang. I mean, you can't escape this shit, man. Yeah, right. And we are products of our environments. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy. And this is something that it bothers me because I grew up in it. And I see people like, you know, I mentioned Haiti, that I went to Haiti. It's very easy for us sitting in the United States with our air conditioning house and our nice cars and not potholes in the streets and public Wi-Fi and running water and everything else to sit back and be like, look at those motherfuckers. Why can't they just pick themselves up from their bootstraps like I did? Why can't they just start up their own business like we did? It's not that it's not the same thing. Like, you guys don't understand. And your environment dictates a lot about who you are. So if I'm not mistaken, you're Cuban, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
And in Cubans, you guys like to say coño a lot. Hey, coño, coño,
that's right.
Coño.
That's right.
That's a highly Cuban thing. That's a highly Cuban thing. Where did you learn that from?
Yeah, the environment.
That was your environment.
Right.
You heard your mom, your dad, your uncles, your cousins say that. At some point, you wanted to say that. Mm-hmm. At some point when your daughter was old enough to talk and the first time she called somebody a coño, yeah, we're like, oh my God, that's so fucking awesome. That's so cute. Well, Imagine that in a negative form.
Right.
You know, when the first time that somebody's, hey, oh my God, look, he's so cute. He's wearing these little baggy pants. Oh, we shaved his head. Oh, look at him. He's throwing up gang signs or blah, 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 blah. They condition you to go there. So it's really hard for people that are not in that scenario to even know what that is. And I've taken that and I've learned from my mistakes because I used to judge people a lot growing up in that environment. You know, it's very easy for rich people to judge poor people, but on the flip side of that, it's very easy for poor people to judge rich people. Mm-hmm. I always used to judge people all the time. Well, look at that guy here. Look at that rich motherfucker right there. Look at that white boy over there. He never had to struggle, man. His dad owned a business. You know, what did he know about struggling anything? Like, man, things must have been really, really easy for you. So part of growing up in that environment is, A, you have to have all this additional crap around you. But B, it breeds a impoverished mentality. And one of the things that I love being Guatemalan, I love the fact that my parents were born in Guatemala because I'm first generation. So I was born here in the States, but my parents didn't give a shit about all the name brand stuff. Mm. They didn't care about driving the newest car. They didn't care about having Lucky Charms and not having the off-brand stuff.
Brand, right.
They didn't care. Like, we never had name brand anything in our house. Payless was the place where we went to go get our shoes most of the time. Big Five Sporting Goods were some of the places where we got our toys. You know, that was just kind of what we did. The good and the bad of that was that it made me very humble. It made me very non-materialistic. I see what a lot of my other friends that were born and raised here, or their parents were born and raised here, how they fell into a very materialistic trap where they needed to be out there spending the money, going to the clubs, buying the cars, doing all these things, living this flashy lifestyle. However, though, it did really held me back, because as poor Latins, we're taught that that's a good thing. You know, we're taught that, that Jesus loves the poor people, and we're poor, so that's awesome. We don't even have to worry about doing better for ourselves.
Right.
We're taught that, hey, man, rich people are bad. Those people are greedy. Those people, you know, they must have done something shady to get there. There's no way in hell. Look at that guy. He's sitting back in his office, relaxing with his family, while I'm over here slaving outside in the field. Like, he's got to be doing something wrong. She's got to be doing something wrong. She's got to be sleeping with somebody. It creates a different mindset that really holds us back.
BP, isn't it
amazing? A lot of it holds back.
Dude, isn't it amazing how our mindset and our environment can completely dictate the course of our life? Like, talk to me, when your parents got you out of that environment in South LA and you guys moved to Arizona, at what point did you start to have a mindset shift? Because to your point, you know, Latinos are, they think a certain way, and then they instill that in their children. At what point did you start getting involved in personal development, start to want more for your life, start to kind of think a little bit different? Because my thought is, listening to your story, is number one, your parents having the vision to get you out of that because they saw what was coming. But number two, at some point you had to put in the work and you had to make a conscious effort to think different and get and start surrounding yourself with the right types of people, get involved in personal development. So talk to me a little bit about that part of your journey.
Yeah. Step number one in changing your programming is awareness. So you have to be aware that the current programming that you have is bad. And that's really hard to do when everybody in your environment is telling you that it's good. Mm-hmm. So as Latino men, especially as Latino men, we have this thing where it's kind of like this machismo thing.
Yeah.
And part of it has to do, part of that machismo thing has to do with how hard you work. It's like, as Latino men, especially when we're speaking Spanish, we tend to brag about how hard we work and how good we are at work.
It's like a badge of honor.
That's exactly. So you're a little 4 or 5 year old kid, 10 year old kid. You see your dad, your uncle, they're bragging about this. Now you want to fit into this circle, right? Now then you start working hard. Now your grandpa and your uncle and your dad are very proud of you because, oh, look at my son. He's a really hard worker. Es un trabajador. Es un trabajador. He works his ass off. Man, this kid will work. He's like a fucking Neo. He'll work harder than anybody. You start getting reinforced this thing. Now, the reason why I bring that up is because it becomes so common in you that you're not even aware of the fact that you are being programmed to, you have to work hard, 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 because it's good. It's good. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with the rest of our world, the rest of our society here in America. Excuse me, where it's like, you got good grades, good for you. You went to college, good for you. You went to go get a degree, good for you. You're going to go get a third degree, good for you. You're going to go get a second master's, second doctor's, good for you. Even if they don't do anything with it, it's still good for you, good for you, good for
it's
you.
It's praised and glorified.
Exactly. So anyway, I had to eventually recognize that mindset was wrong. Now, I do agree that the first seed from that came with my parents moving me out of South LA. Because when you're in that South LA environment, all that stuff isn't around you all the time. Like I said, everybody, dude, where we lived in Southgate, literally, it was just our street. Right across the street was a probably eightplex, something like that. The whole apartment complex was a gang. Like, it was they were all part of the same gang. They all hung out there. They all stood there. So I couldn't even leave my house without seeing gangs.
Yeah.
The next door neighbor, who they also came from a good family. They had a good, solid family. I remember that we paid, that we rented an apartment when they actually owned the house next door to us. Mm-hmm. Their son got involved with that gang. And eventually the dad had to beg with the gang to let him out. And they said, we'll let him out, but we got to beat the fuck out of him. And they beat the shit out of this kid, man. He was probably like 13, 14 years old. Some kid that I grew up with. We knew because my the parents were also Guatemalan, and they happened to grow up in the same neighborhood as my family. So getting out of that environment was step one for me, just to kind of not be surrounded by that and let me look at things different.
Yeah.
I do remember that in all of our friends and family from Guatemala, everybody was poor with the exception of this one lady. And this one lady sold Mary Kay, and she did real estate. She was a realtor.
Is that what kind of got you thinking that you might want to get involved in real estate?
That is correct, because that was she also came from the same neighborhood as my parents in Guatemala. She didn't have the best English, but she knew that she went out here and showed people's houses. And I'm like, man, that seems like a pretty easy job. Like that seems like my parents are over here busting their ass in factories and construction and stuff. And I'm like, man, she's just driving around in a house and a car, just talking to people, showing them, like, man, that sounds pretty cool. Now that was me and my, 10, 12 year old mindset.
Yeah.
As I started moving further, I think it was right about the age of 17-ish or so, when I was just staying up late watching infomercials. That was, I think that was like 1999, 2000-ish area. I was just up, and Carlton Sheets was on TV all too, the brother. Fucking time.
Me, that all was the first, time. No money down. First program I ever bought, man. Yep, I thought real estate was about assuming loans. You remember that?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing is I didn't even have the $200 to buy the program.
Wow.
I couldn't even borrow the $200 from my parents to buy the program. So I just sat there with like hopes and dreams of one day reaching that, of one day being able to do real estate. So I started just kind of looking around different places, and I went to pretty much every multi-level marketing pitch that you can think of, every one of their meetings that they had, and all these different things. And eventually I joined one of the multi-level marketing companies, and I didn't last very long, and I honestly didn't even like it, to be quite honest. But what I did realize is that every single time they got together in these big rooms, like in the conference rooms and stuff, everybody that was high level always talked about mindset in one way or the other. Now, I just heard about it then, but I never really paid a lot of attention to it until I got into real estate. Especially when I got into real estate investing, I realized that a lot of the people that have been doing this for a while, a lot of the people that were successful, a lot of the wholesalers that were actually doing deals, were about the mindset.
Mm-hmm.
You had two types of people. You had the go getters. I'm gonna fucking work 100 hours a week, and then you had people that were about the mindset. People that understood that, hey man, it's these things that come in. And I remember I started working for my very first investor, and he had me door knocking. He literally just printed out a lead list and said, hey man, go knock on these people's doors. Good luck. Let me know if you get a lead. And if you do get a lead, I'll send my closer. And if we close it, I'll give you 25% of profit. That was it. That was all. That was the only training that I had.
What I love about that, man? I love about the fact that you got started door knocking. Everything else is so much easier, because door knocking is one of those things that most people are just not willing to do, because man, it takes guts to just go up to a stranger's house and knock doors. I mean, when I got started, it was direct mail and door knocking. That's how I did my first handful of deals. So I love the fact that that's how you got started, because everything else after that, I would imagine, maybe didn't seem as challenging, you know?
Well, I know because, I know you, and we've talked before, that you're probably the large majority of your audience is wholesaling or looking to get into wholesaling, just getting started in real estate or potentially thinking about getting started in real estate. I'm going to make a very bold claim right now that nobody can ever make in general. I can fucking guarantee you how you can become successful in real estate.
Talk to me.
Fucking guarantee you. For anybody out there in real estate thinking about getting into real estate, I fucking guarantee you, if you learn how to door knock successfully, you can be successful at door knocking, getting, that's your only deal source is door knocking. Learning how to turn that shit into actual deals and doing that shit consistently, I will fucking guarantee you that you will be successful in real estate for the rest of your fucking life, regardless of what aspect you choose to go into real estate. Because there is absolutely nothing harder than door knocking somebody's door. Specifically when I was doing it, I was doing pre-foreclosure stuff.
Yeah, dunk, me too. Dunk.
Hey man, you are at least 90 days behind on your payments. I can buy your house, and I'm driving up in a piece of shit fucking car in the hood. They're like, fuck you, dude. What are you talking about? I'm not behind on payments. You're wrong. They're wrong. You're crazy. I've already taken care of that. Get the fuck out of here. Why are you saying this? You know, whatever things you can, as much objections as you possibly can get.
BP,
but you know what?
Oh, no, sorry. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Well, what I was going to say, what really helped me out with that and being able to stick with it was the mindset. Having the correct mindset, because it's really easy to get detracted when you're constantly being told no, especially that tends to happen when you're door knocking.
Dude, let me just be honest, man. I remember when the first week that I went door knocking, this was late 2005. I was so scared that I was literally walking up to doors praying that nobody was home. So think about this. I've gone out there. I finally decided to do this, and I'm like praying to God, please don't answer the door. And man, yep. I had to get the door slammed in my face several times. I had to get those cobwebs out, so to speak. And then I finally realized, man, that it's like every no is getting me closer to a yes. And to your point, that just speaks to mindset. That was about the books I was reading, the environment I was choosing to put myself in, that every failure was a closer to a success or closer to a deal. So man, I don't think I've ever heard somebody say that, but I can see why you would. It's not easy, man. And if people are willing to break through that fear and go do it, everything else is so much easier.
Dude, I guarantee you there is absolutely nothing harder. Now, I'm not saying, hey, if you go door knock once or get a deal out of door knocking, you'll be successful. No. If you can successfully learn how to door knock, if you can successfully learn how to do this when you're constantly pulling deals, when you know, worst case scenario, you can knock on some doors and you can get a deal. Like, you're guaranteed, because cold calling is not that hard. Negotiating once they let you in is not that hard. Mm-hmm. Talking to private lenders is not that hard. Talking to hard money lenders is not that hard. Any other aspect, sending out mailers and having people call you, getting leads from online. I mean, none of it is as hard as just, thung, 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 you weren't expecting me. I know this is not a good time for you to talk anyway. You're already pissed off because you're financially screwed and you're about to lose your biggest investment. I already know that you're mad at the world. So this, let me come talk to you. That right there, once again, that's holding the hardest thing. And man, I remember a weird example, but still it sticks with me. My nephew is now 18. He was like 2 years old, and I bought a $5 DVD from Walmart bin. I remember the big old bin they had in Walmart. And it was a cartoon for the Ninja Turtles.
Okay.
He loved the Ninja Turtles. It was like 3 or 4 episodes on this one DVD. On the beginning of one of the episodes, Master Splinter was narrating, and he said, "In the road of life, when given two choices, always take the harder road." And this is a cartoon. This is a fucking cartoon for kids where the guy is just, that's not even like the point of the story, right? This is just a little monologue that he's saying while the story's getting going.
Mm-hmm.
And it just stuck with me. It really stuck with me because I realized that if you put yourself and you challenge yourself, you are going to be forced to grow. And if you don't challenge yourself to grow, you're never going to grow. Which is why most people never get into personal development, because it's easy. It's easier to go door knock than it is to go do personal development, than to face yourself in the mirror and say, look, motherfucker, no, it's nobody else's fault. Everything that I have is because I attracted it into my life. All the bad, the bad.
Dude, I love what you're saying. I think when people start holding themselves more accountable, looking in the mirror and stop deflecting and shifting blame towards others, towards society, towards whatever, when you start accepting, you know, responsibility that you are in your life today because of the choices you've made, the decisions you've made, you're the only one responsible for your success or lack thereof. When people start to wrap their heads around that, until they do, they're going to stay in the same place. And to your point, BP, it's a lot more comfortable and easy to just stay who you are than it is to grow, to stretch, to expand yourself. So couldn't agree with you more, man. Love it.
That's the most uncomfortable thing. So as I was going through my journey, I realized that I started noticing that all these successful people were doing personal development. And then I started realizing that, man, maybe I have something to do with this. I got into real estate, and the guy, the very first guy that took me door knocking, he took me to this personal development thing. It was like kind of a boys trip. We were all going to Vegas. It was like five or six of us. We were all in our early 20s, bro. And we were just going to Vegas, and our excuse to go to Vegas was that we were going to this personal development seminar, which I did, and I enjoyed it, and I really took a lot into it. And a lot of it was, I control everything that happens to me.
Yeah.
So I started saying, you know what? I need to get more involved into this. Because one of the things that I realized is that it didn't matter how much money you made. I met some really successful, unhappy people.
Sure.
The very first investor that I worked with who let me door knock for him, he had split apart from his ex-business partner. I had met his ex-business partner before, because the first initial meeting that we had was back in their office when they had a office together. He was like, hey, man, we're just meeting here because my office is not ready, but I'm separating from him, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
His other business partner was ridiculously, ridiculously successful, but a fucking goddamn ticking time bomb. I mean, a crazy ticking time bomb, doing all kinds of crazy drugs, doing all kinds of crazy stuff on his personal life, dealing with hookers and this and that and all these other crazy things that were just, dude, you're like, man, if you're smart enough, you can sit back and be like, dude, that motherfucker's going to self-destruct at some point. And he did eventually. He did. So anyway, I saw that and I said, okay, what's the difference between the guy that I'm following and this guy? This guy seems to be a little bit more level-headed. The guy that I'm following seems to be a little bit more calm, a little bit more peaceful, a little bit more at ease with himself. So I started asking a lot of it, and a lot of it had to do with personal development. And once I started taking personal responsibility, once I stopped blaming everybody else, because throughout my whole childhood, especially growing up in Southern California, especially growing up there for the Rodney King riots and seeing all that shit, seeing all that racism stuff, being victim of racism myself, I was always very quick to point and say, it's because the white people here, those people are taking me. They don't take me seriously because I'm brown, because I'm here. It was always all these excuses that I had in my head as to why people wouldn't take me seriously, when in reality, it was just bullshit that I was feeding and I was creating my own environment.
Yeah,
exactly. Once I realized that I had the power, then I started to really, really get into personal development. I think, man, I have been in personal development now, I would say for about 10 to 12 years.
And so let me ask you this. When you say personal development, what does that look like to you? Does that mean the types of books that you're reading, the events you're going to, the people you're surrounding yourself? So when you say personal development, that seems like it's a big part of your life now, BP. What does that mean exactly? Like how have you embraced personal development? Because clearly it's part of what's shaped your life. But when you say personal development, what are you doing on a daily, weekly, monthly basis to make that a part of who you are?
Well, at first it started with books. It just started with information. It started with learning things differently. And really the basis of personal development is learning how your mind works. And the basis of your mind is you against yourself, which is your higher mind versus your ego mind. Those are just something that we're constantly clashing. And for you guys that don't know anything about personal development, your ego mind is that chattering bitch who's always like, what's going on? How are you going to pay your bills? What's going on? What happened to that person? That they're going to tell you no. Everybody has it. But if you don't know that it exists, you don't even know that it's a thing. Mm-hmm. Like before we started in personal development, we didn't even know that it was called the ego mind. We didn't know that its only purpose was to scare us and keep us surviving. We didn't know that it didn't care about our happiness or us being prosperous. We just listened to this thing all the time. We didn't even know that we shouldn't be listening to it. We thought this motherfucker was our friend. Right? So personal development, I started by learning and by reading books and understanding, hey, that's not really what we need. Things aren't really what they seem. We really need to start focusing. And the first book that I read that was in personal development was something called The Power of Your Subconscious Mind by Dr. Joseph Murphy. Mm. And the reason why I liked that book a lot was because I was very skeptical initially. I was like, what's with this heebie-deebie fucking law of attraction shit, dude? Like, that sounds like some religious crap, some cult stuff that I'm not interested in. The book, the Power of Your Subconscious Mind, he's a scientist. And basically, he does all these studies, these scientific studies. And at the end of his book, he actually has, I would say, the last 20, 30 pages are just references to all the studies that he quotes in the book. So he goes in there how your mind works and your subconscious and your conscious mind works. And he just goes through all these scientific studies about it. So that was like, okay, well, there's validation to this. Now let me start getting more into it.
Yeah.
About 8 years ago, I met my mentor, Jeff Fagan, and he holds a weekly class. We call it the Phoenix 2% Club. And the 2% Club is just a reference to Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, where he says that only 2% of the population are either ever even thinking about growing themselves or doing anything above what their program mind tells them to do. So we sit there and we study Secrets of the Millionaire Mind by T. Harv Eker. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we study this book constantly over and over and over and over and over. The guy leading the class, Jeff, actually is a personal childhood friend of T. Harv Eker. And when Harv was writing the book, Harv hired Jeff, said, hey man, I need you to build the systems because I'm about to blow the fuck up. Like, I got about 20 employees, 30 employees right now. But once I release this book, it's going to grow the company peak potentials, which eventually that's what it became. Nonetheless, so we start going over this on a weekly basis. So you've asked me what my personal development looks like. As I said, initially started by books, just by reading books, gathering information, learning things different. As I started taking it more seriously, I said, how can I, if everything stems from my mind, how can I look into my mind more? How can I program my mind more? And that's why the book, The Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, resonated with me so much. Because it tells you that you have your blueprint.
That's right.
It tells you that you've been programmed to do. Mm-hmm. But not only a money blueprint, but everything else. Bro, you have been programmed to like the shit that you like. Talk the way that you talk. Listen to the music that you listen to. Everything else is associated with us, right? And one of the biggest portions of that is money. Everybody's been taught how money works by their family, their society, by their culture. There are certain cultures that, you know, there are certain cultures that are a lot worse with money. Certain cultures that are a lot better with money. Regardless of how much money they actually have, they're just better at it as a culture. That doesn't mean that every single person is great at it from that culture, but as a culture, they're just generally better.
Yeah.
So yeah, I started just digging into personal development as much as I possibly could.
I absolutely love that, man. And what's interesting, I remember T. Harv Eker, man, I used to repeat affirmations. I have a millionaire mind, like constantly, like 50, 100 times a day. I used to repeat that when I was getting in personal development. And one of the things that really, a seed was planted in me after I read that book is that, and I've kind of trained myself now on a daily, weekly basis, I do a self audit of my thoughts. When something initially pops in my head, you know, I question where that comes from and if that thought is empowering me or if it's taking me away from my goals, my dreams, my desires. And I think if people adopt that mentality, you start doing a self audit, do an inventory of your thoughts and ask yourself, is that thought empowering or is it moving me away from what I ultimately want? That came from T. Harv Eker's Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. I remember he talks about like when you pull up to a red light, if you see a rich guy in a car, you know, are you thinking automatically like, oh, he must have stole, he must have cheated to get that? Like, is that a thought for you? You know, and if it is, you're wired a certain way and you have to undo that programming. And obviously that's done by just being committed to personal development the way you have.
I've really taken it. So as I said, when I met my mentor, Jeff, this was 8 years ago, he holds a class every Tuesday. I have been faithfully going to that class. It's a 90-minute class every single Tuesday. And for anybody of you guys that are connected with me on social media, easiest way to do is at Cashflow Creator on Instagram. But you can see every single Tuesday I post. I'm here in my mastermind. I'll post either a picture of the book or a picture of my notes. If you guys follow me on my stories, I tend to post like little videos of the meetings, little pictures of my notes and stuff like that. Because it's something that I've been going through day after day, week after week, time after time, month after month, year after year. I've been going and we read the same book. You know, it's not like the book changes. But we are constantly growing and learning.
Yes.
I don't even understand. I mean, I'm probably 20 or so times reading the book because we go through it a few times a year. So it's just going through all the time, going through the same stuff. My mentor tends to say, you know, the same stories, the same examples. But it took that long for it to start beating into my head.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he talks about the most, one of the things that that he really, really pushes on my mentor is not only the mindset, but also creating passive income, winning the money game, understanding that for you to win the money game and for you to be financially free and not be stuck in this rat race, you have to make enough passive income to pay for your lifestyle. Now, you know, what's crazy is that everybody hears that message. They say, yep. Yeah. Hell yeah. Fuck yeah. That's what we have to do. They shake their head and then they go back to work. Yeah. And then they go back to wholesaling. And then they go back to fucking flipping.
This is a perfect segue into what I wanted to spend the last 10 minutes or so of the show on. So there's such a large majority of the audience that they're wholesalers and they're successful wholesalers. And BP, people say, you know, what's one of the biggest mistakes you've made in your career and your business? For me, I got addicted to that wholesaling income and it wasn't, you know, 10 years in the business. And I look back and I say, you know, how many assets and what cash flow do I have to show for it? And yeah, I've built a nice lifestyle and I've provided for my family and I've built the team and all that. But it wasn't until about two and a half years ago that I started getting serious and I'm like, I need assets. I need cash flow. I got into this business for wealth building, not to just make a lot of money every single year, pay a ton of taxes, and then get back after it again. So you got started door knocking, bandit signs, wholesaling. How'd you transition into multifamily? And talk how you've been able to create that cash flow, as your Instagram handle says.
Well, basically, as I mentioned, it all started with personal development. It started by learning what do I want. Through personal development, you start getting to know yourself. Mm-hmm. And one thing that most people do not know is themselves. Like, people know a lot of bullshit ass information, but one thing that they don't know is who they are, why they want the things that they want. Mm-hmm. So initially, in my upbringing, the only way that I knew was to work hard. Even the successful people that we had from the same background that I did, whether they were doctors, lawyers, athletes, whatever, they all preach the same thing. You got to work hard.
Yeah.
It wasn't until personal development that I realized that, hey, man, I want to not work hard. There's got to be a different way. There's got to be a better way to do that. So as I mentioned, I started out by door knocking. Then the market crashed, and because I was doing pre-foreclosures, I kind of got out the market right about 2007. 2008, I spent a whole year working in corporate America, and I said, fuck this shit, I'm never going to come back again. I started a bandit sign company because I remembered working at that office. Everybody liked bandit signs, but nobody liked putting them out themselves. And all these people had a little bit of seed money. All these people had family support and stuff. And I didn't have any of that. So I was like, you know what? There's got to be more people like these. And this is a great way for me to get back into the business and expand my network. So as I started doing that, I eventually met other investors, moved back into wholesaling, did that successfully for a few years, then flipping for a while. But I started getting tired of the grind. It became a job. Yes, I was making a lot of money. Yes, I was providing a lot of, value and a lot of work for a lot of people. Yes, I was being able to provide a certain lifestyle for myself and being able to travel and being able to provide a certain lifestyle for my family. But it started wearing on me that this is not what I really want. Through personal development, I started learning who it was that I really wanted and what it is that I really wanted. And a few years ago, I want to say it was like 5 or so years ago, I did an exercise. And basically, long story short, I found out that I was fucking lazy. Like I realized that I was lazy, which is counterproductive as a male Latino and as a hustler. Dude, I'm not going to take off my shirt, but right above my heart, right over here, tattooed, my very first tattoo, Lisa Hustle. That was an affirmation for me to look in the mirror every single day and remind myself that I need to hustle, 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 hustle. And then I put grind on this side because I needed a grind and I needed a hustle. This was a conscious decision. I wasn't stupid. I wasn't drunk. I knew what I was doing. This was a conscious decision for me to remind myself that I needed to do that. So that guy, I'm a hustler, realizing, man, you know what? I'm really lazy. Like I'm a really good worker, but I don't really like to work. I kind of like to not do anything. I kind of like not to be busy. I don't really like the all the time.
Wow.
It took that realizing that for me to say, you know what? Let me look at different ways where I can make money and still be lazy, where I can spend whatever time I want to, you know, and normally in my regular life, when my baby's not here, I like to wake up early. I like to be active, whatever. When my newborn is here, man, you know, and this whole time growing, this motherfucker wants to sleep into 8, 9 o'clock. Well, guess what? I'm gonna sleep into 8, 9 o'clock with him. I'm taking advantage of it, you know, because he wakes up in the middle of the night and everything else. And then after I wake him up, then I gotta get him dressed and I gotta feed him and get him everything. And, you know, that takes time. And before you know it, it's 10, 11 o'clock before I even want to consider maybe working for that day.
Right.
I had to realize how I was going to do that. And wholesaling was not going to allow me to do that. Mm-hmm. Fixing and flipping, even though I had a system where I did very little. When I was fixing and flipping, I was fixing and flipping 15 houses at a time. And literally, I would get a wholesaler. I'd be like, all right, I'm going to check it out. Take a look at it. Yeah, that looks good. Call my contractor. Hey, man, I need you to do XYZ at this property. Here's the lockbox code. Tell me, make sure you get it done by this price. I would go check on it a few times throughout the process, make a few payments, and then sign paperwork at the end. But even that became too much work for me. Even that was like, because once again, multiply that times 15. You're like, oh, man, oh, crap. Now I got to go to this. Now I got to go to this signing. I got to come back here. I got to come back from my vacation. Why can't I just sign at the fucking consulate? Why can't I just go to whatever, right? No, it has to be a wet signature. You have to be here. I had to cut one of my vacations short. And I was like, oh, man, that's what broke the camel's back, bro. So I needed to look at something different. And that's where multifamily came in. I started with buying single family rentals and I was like, man, this is going to take forever. Logistically, this is just not making sense for me. How am I going to manage all these things? How am I going to have somebody manage these things for me? Logistically, it didn't make sense. So that's why multifamily started making a whole lot more sense for me. That's why.
So this was around what, 2014, 15?
No, I'm transitioned. So let me see here. We're in 2019. In 2000, right at the end of 2016 is when I started looking into multifamily.
Okay.
Now,
I was just going to ask, did you do a hard break away from flipping and wholesaling? And you said, this is my focus now, multifamily. And you jumped into the deep end, so to speak, or were you still doing some things to generate some income while you were kind of figuring the multifamily side out?
Man, dude, I'm a jump into the deep end type of person.
I figured,
my mentor teaches me all the time, and it's something that I put out there. The definition of an entrepreneur is somebody that jumps off a cliff and builds a plane on the way down.
I love that.
You know, you got it takes those big old gorilla balls to get up and make that jump, to make that transition. And one of the hardest places to make that transition is when you're comfortable.
Yeah.
When you're doing wholesale deals and you're making $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 per deal, it's not really costing you a lot, but you're still always grinding for the next deal. but mm-hmm. it's comfortable. You're making over 100,000. You're running a million-dollar company. You're outgrowing your thing, and you're bringing up people and everything, and it's comfortable. But you're not really looking at the reality of, hey, how is this going to look for me down the line in the future? Mm-hmm. And putting a stop to all that, it was very scary. Because imagine if I'm juggling balls in the air. I'm juggling 15 fucking flips at one time. They're all in different stages, all in different places, and I'm just juggling these motherfuckers. I couldn't just stop as much as I wanted to. Dude, I was so fed up with fucking flipping. I was so fed up with flipping that by the middle of 2017, I ended up going to a seminar where, you know, the guy taught me the very first time how to buy apartment complexes. And I came back and I said, I'm done. I am not buying another fucking flip ever again. Right now, we're just finishing the ones. One by one, I'll let one of these balls go. We'll close it out. Because I had investors in all of my deals. I always deal with private money investors. I always want to make sure that their money is covered. They're the ones taken care of. Always. Smart. First and foremost, before my profits. Nonetheless, though, I realized I did make a hard line. I said, I'm not buying any more flips starting from this day. And one of my worst flips, that it was a fucking pain in the ass, just complete pain in the ass. I'm pretty sure that I lost money on this one. I bought while I was walking into that seminar back in the summer of 2017.
Okay.
And it was almost like the universe was like, here's one more so you can learn your fucking lesson to get the hell out of here and don't ever come back. So it's been difficult. It has been difficult when you go from as flipping and having 15 flips going at one time, I knew that every two or so weeks I was going to get a check for whatever, man, $20, $30, $40, $50,000 that was coming in. Mm-hmm. I already knew that because a flip was going to be closing at some point. Money was going to be coming in from an investor at some point. Like it was, but it was a big machine that I was constantly juggling. And what I realized, you have to feed it. And that was one of the things that I hated the most, was that I started dreading the beginning or the end of the month, the beginning of the month, the first of the month. Mm-hmm. Because now I had to pay all my hard money loans. Now I had to pay all my private money loans. Now I had to pay all my utilities. Now I had to make all my payments for everything. And I said, dude, you know what? I don't want to dislike the first of the month. I want to be excited for the first of the month. This is not the way that I want to live my lifestyle. Yes, I'm making a lot of money, but that's not what I want to do. Yeah. So as I started winding down, trust me, the opportunities still were bringing to me. The people were still bringing me deals because I had the reputation of doing that many flips at one time. People were still bringing me, hey, check this out, check that out, check that out. So the disciplined to be like, nope, this is what I'm doing. Nope, this is what I'm doing. Nope, this is what I'm doing. And you know, once again, just being 100% full transparency for anybody looking to make that jump, it is a financial adjustment period.
I was going to ask you,
all this fucking money.
Yeah. Dude, no doubt. I was going to ask you, did you have cash set aside to kind of bridge that gap? Because for anybody looking to jump into multifamily, it's a completely different business than mm-hmm. wholesale. I mean, it's
a fucking monster.
Yeah, it's a beast of a business. It's going to take relationships and a lot of hard work. And yeah, you got to work smart, but you got to build relationships and you got to get after it. And I'm not saying it's not going to happen quickly, but generally speaking, you're probably not jumping into multifamily and doing your first deal I hate to kind of put that out there, but most people I've connected with that are successful multifamily investors, it took them a bit to get up and going, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that, it takes a while for you to build your mindset. Every single step that I took, from knocking on doors to putting out bandit signs to locking up my own deals to wholesaling my own shit to flipping my own stuff to going from one flip to two flips to five flips to 15 to saying, you know what, fuck this shit. I'm going to move into this. I'm going to move into that. I'm going to buy something out of my state. Like all of that was a different shift of mindset. And one of the biggest things is the fear of the unknown. because the wolf in your mind is worse than the wolf in real life. It's always fucking scarier. And so, guys, let me tell you something right now, man. I'm about to drop this shit right now. Guys, it's never as good as it seems, but it's also never as hard as it seems. And probably they should have said it the other way around. It's never as hard as it seems, but it's never as good as it seems also. Like, that's there's wisdom, always man. Going to be things. And guys, it's always scarier than what it really is. Now, I had a little bit of money saved because obviously, like I said, I was doing a lot of flips coming in and out. I also had a lot of investors that needed to be paid out. So I just like always, I wanted to make sure that my investors were always taken care of. I have closed out a few deals, and I finally, my very last flip closed and sold last November. So even though I had shut it down, there was still a pipeline there that was bringing me a little bit of money, you know, coming in every month or so from the different deals that I still had in the pipeline. However, though, it was a big transition. It was a huge transition with having big chunks of money coming in to having smaller chunks of money that now have to last a little bit longer because I'm not filling up that pipeline a little bit more. And with multifamily, one of the things that people don't really realize is that you're not going to be making money for at least 12 to 18 months.
Yeah.
Realistically, even if you buy the property cash flowing from day one, you're buying it because it has a problem. You're buying it because there's a value add opportunity. You're buying it because you're probably going to have to get rid of some of those tenants. You're probably going to have to up your rent. You're probably going to have to do a few things that are going to fluctuate your cash flow. We're about to refinance on our out-of-state deal that we did in Arkansas. So when I first met you, actually, I don't know if you remember, but I was literally flying out the next day to go do the due diligence.
Dude, I remember you posted a picture in the Facebook group of you and I think somebody else standing in front of the sign of that apartment complex that you guys had just closed on it, right?
Yeah, that was my business partner, Cashflow Chris Ontiveros.
Yes.
So yeah, we went over there and actually we did the due diligence. So we were doing that. We hadn't closed it yet, but we went there specifically to do due diligence and we were just checking out this out-of-state apartment complex. It has been about a year. We have personally, me and Chris have not made any money from that deal. All of our money has been out to pay our investors. So we promised them a return. They're getting their preferred return. They're getting their shit paid out. We expect that this month will be the first month that we're actually going to be able to pull some money out here, or this quarter, so the second quarter.
Amazing.
We have actually to pull some money out for ourselves. And we structured it now to where we're going to be able to refinance that property and pull our investors' initial money out within the 12-month time frame. But we didn't get paid for those whole 12 months. We did have a small acquisition fee in there for us, but it was a smaller deal, just being that it was in Arkansas. It was a smaller town, the price point. So it wasn't a lot to sustain us for a long time.
Got it.
And honestly, if I remember correctly, when we got that deal, that was just enough to help us pay for what we needed. Because if I even remember more correctly, there was an investor who had invested with us there, and I had actually held this money, and I had to borrow like 10 grand just to pay a few bills. So when I got my acquisitions fee, then 10 grand automatically had to go back to pay that investor. And then the rest of it was just kind of to float me for the next, you know, month or two. So, and the reason why I'm saying this, guys, is because you have to understand that it is a process if you're looking to move into multifamily.
Yep.
Absolutely. All right, I got you back. Okay, cool. BP, man, this has been awesome. I've really, really enjoyed listening to your story, your upbringing. I love the personal development and mindset talk. I admire you for, you know, the just committing, man. You're the kind of guy, like you said, you jump into the deep end, you burn the ships, you commit to something. And I'm excited to see your growth in the multifamily game. Let me ask you this, man. This is something I typically ask guests that I have on the show, and I kind of end the show with this. You're a pretty young guy, man. I think you're probably my age, right? Late 30s?
Yeah, I'm 36.
Okay, so 36. Rewind the clock 15, 20 years. Knowing what you know now, what would you share with yourself? What's the one piece of advice you would share with a 20-year-old Brian?
It's all mindset. It's all made up. Do we make our own reality? And if I could somehow convey that to my 15-year-old self and have him actually believe me, it would be ridiculously vital for me. Honestly, it all starts with your mindset. One of the things that I do is I offer coaching, but I don't offer real estate coaching. I offer mindset coaching, because mindset is going to get you there and keep you there. Mm. Mindset is the foundation that will help you not only build your building tall, but will also help you sustain it when the storms come. Because a lot of people know how to build high, but they don't know how to keep it. They don't know how to sustain it. And I saw that in 2008, 2009, all these people that were out there, big dogs, making all this big money when the market was hot, all of a sudden, man. And I associated with the people that did. So it was all about the mindset. And the second thing, it's all about networking. It's not what you know, it's who you know. And what I would drop something that I've been telling most people here, it's not who you know, but how you know them.
That's right. And who knows you?
And who knows you, but how you know them.
Yeah.
No, how do you, like, so if I know you and we both met online, whatever, and we were like, hey man, you're cool, let's do business, you're in the same industry as I do, and then somebody else meets you, but they didn't meet you face to face like I did. They didn't go to the same event, they didn't get to hang out, they weren't on your show, they didn't get to eat with you, we didn't talk. It's different. You're more likely, if you have the choice to do business between either one of those two,
no doubt,
you're more than likely to do the one that you know personally. So it's how you know them. And if I were to really take myself back, man, somebody told me a long time ago that it was all about networking, and I thought they were full of shit. Like, I honestly thought this guy was lying to me. I thought this was just an like, go fuck yourself type of answer. Like, don't bother me. It's all about networking. I'm like, dude, you're so full of shit. But now, man, I realize that it really is all about networking. I'm actually, as soon as I get off the interview here, I got to schedule a phone call in about 20 minutes or so. But the guy is raised millions and millions and millions of dollars. And right now I'm raising more money for some of the deals and lining up some more deals in the future. And I said, hey, man, I could really use some help. This guy has literally raised millions and millions of dollars. We're going to sit on the phone because I can help him out with one of his problems. He can help me out with one of my problems. And guess what? I ran into him at a networking event. So we know each other even better. Yeah. We've reconnected because of that. And if I can take it back, man, it's all about the mindset, understanding that you're not that different than everybody else. If you're a brand newbie wholesaler right now, you're not that different than me. I mean, I'm a regular ass guy. I cuss all the time. I like women. I like traveling. I like to drink. I like to smoke weed. I'm a very just genuine type of person. And anyway, if I can go back and tell that to myself, I would just let me know it's all in your mind and it's all about who you associate with and your network.
Yeah. Brother, again, man, I really, I appreciate and admire you for just being who you are. You know, not giving a shit about what people think and just, you know, living your true self, man, living your truth, coming on here and just kind of sharing your story, because I can guarantee you it's going to connect with a lot of people, you know, maybe even not people that were in that environment, but just the fact that you were able to come from that and make something of your life, be very successful. And, you know, man, I appreciate you. This has been a fun show to do, and I'm looking forward to releasing this and getting this into people's ears. And hopefully, man, my thought process, BP, is if this can resonate and connect with at least one person and change the course of their life, it's more than worth it, man. And I know you would co-sign on that. So
I will definitely co-sign on that. As I mentioned, I go to my weekly Tuesday meetings. The guy has been doing this for free for many years, and I'm one of the few people, probably the only one, that has actually like consistently been there all the time. And that's the most rewarding thing for him.
Yeah.
Just knowing and seeing. And he's like a proud dad when he talks about me. He's so proud of me and what I've done. And look at what happens when you just stick with it, you know? And yeah, I do. Hopefully if somebody out there just gets the message about putting and bringing into your personal development, I can attest personally for myself and for my students that this really is the best way to not only build your growth, but actually sustain it. And because guys, it's not about what you make. It's about who you become. It's not about how much money you end up with. It's not about how much cars you have. It's about the person you become. It's about that genuine, awesome person that you become. And maybe my style resonates with you and maybe it doesn't. And if it doesn't, you don't have to be like me. Just find out who you are and be the best version of yourself, whatever that may be. So Alex, dude, I really appreciate you sending me over here. Very quick plug at the back and the back end. I do have you scheduled for our show, Flipping Fridays. So for anybody out there, we do a show, me and my business partner, Chris Ontiveros, called Flipping Fridays, where we talk about everything real estate related, wholesaling, getting started. We've done shows about multifamily. We've literally broken down the whiteboard and broken down our last two multifamilies from what we're buying it, how much we're making, what the investors are making, everything else. So we go out there and we share. And I know we have you scheduled here for the show, so I'm not 100% sure when we're scheduled, but I know that we're scheduled, so you'll be a guest on our show, and I'm looking forward to having you on there. Absolutely. And once again, just reminding you people, if you're not connected with me on social media, connect with me at Cashflow Creator. And if you heard me on the show, please let me know. I love to know where people are hearing me from, and I love to connect. And if you got value of it, just send me a message on Instagram. Let me know that you heard me here and that you liked it. And then that just makes my day. That's all it does. It makes my day.
Yeah. thank you, buddy. And no, guys, as always, if you've been following the show, we'll include, so BP's Instagram handle at Cashflow Creator. We'll include his Facebook page. Definitely plug into Flipping Fridays. He's got a really cool show. I'm looking forward to being on it. And brother, thank you, man, for who you are, for what you're doing out there, putting out great content into our space, and appreciate you. And guys, I thank you. This show would not exist without you. I thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for tuning in. There's so many podcasts out there, and you guys have the choice to plug into any podcast. So the fact that you're listening to this right now means that you want a better life. You want, you're going somewhere, and anything I can do, anything BP can do to help you guys to add value, reach out to us. We're very approachable. Just let us know and go make it happen, guys. It all starts with personal development and mindset. So go make it happen.
The most successful people are usually the most accessible. Just keep that in mind, guys.
Drop the mic, my man. We'll talk soon.
All right, brother.
Take care, man.
All right, man. Have a good one.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.